What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 67. Today, we're going to be talking about proper hydration and talk about kind of how much water you need to drink. There's a lot of misconceptions out there. You know, there's a lot of people carrying whatever 10-liter water bottles thinking they need to drink all this water every day to be healthy. They gauge their hydration on the color of their urine. There's all these things that simply are not true. There are a lot of half-truths. So I wanted to dispel some of those rumors and break down how much water you really do need every day. So that's what we'll talk about today. But first, let's do a quick check-in. So Tom, how's your week been?
Man, it's been great. Last night I went to a hockey game. Sorry if my voice is a little off. I was out there all night.
Long night.
Long night, not very much sleep, not really feeling my best right now, but I'm not sick. Don't worry. It's not the Super Bowl yet. Can't be sick.
Yeah. No, you got a schedule for the sicknesses.
Yeah. So, sorry about my voice, but luckily Tyson's going to be doing most of the talking today anyway. He's been waiting to talk about water for some time now.
Forever.
So the one thing I do want to clarify is I was listening to last week's podcast when we were talking about ghrelin and leptin. And I don't really know what we said. I think we got it both right and wrong. We just said a bunch of stuff and none of it made sense. So I just thought like, hey, we should really clarify like what's actually going on.
Yeah. Because those are two big hormones that you're going to see get thrown around a lot in the kind of nutrition world.
Yeah. And we're also going to be talking about ghrelin today a little bit. So
yeah,
thought I might as well just kind of clarify that now. So ghrelin, it's produced by your stomach and it's there as like a stretch receptor to let you know if your stomach's full or empty. So when ghrelin is high, we are hungry. So when your stomach isn't stretched, that's when ghrelin is produced. And then when your stomach gets stretched, then ghrelin is suppressed. And then hunger goes down because you have a full stomach, obviously. So leptin, it's produced by fat cells, and it's the opposite. So when leptin is low, we are hungry. And basically what that means is, hey, we don't have a lot of body fat, so we need to eat to replace some of those stores. And then naturally, if you have a lot of body fat, you shouldn't be hungry because you have all this stored up. The problem today is that a lot of people get so many different signals going back and forth that their bodies are just confused that they're hungry or they're not, and they don't even really know what to interpret.
Yeah, there's something we've talked about a lot is always kind of we preach to listen to your body, you know, like in natural ways. Like our body is smart. Our body will tell us what it needs. But like you just said, so many people nowadays get their hormones hijacked that they can't listen to their body because their body's lying to them.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And one of the things I always preach is like do seasonal eating or try to do that because that's what's going to best resemble what our ancestors did.
Yeah.
And most people eat like it's summer all the time. So people are like their bodies are just confused because like summer we should be storing fat. So, but we have all this body fat already there. So you're sending like two different signals to your body like, oh, hey, I have a lot of fat, so I don't need to eat. But oh, hey, it's summertime. Like there's going to be a winter coming. But like that winter never comes. So it's just a little bit of clarification.
Yeah.
What's up with you this week?
Not much. I mean, honestly, I guess real quick, if you are interested in leptin and ghrelin more, there's a book out there called Fat Chance by Robert Lustig. And he goes into ghrelin and leptin a lot. So he has a YouTube video. It's about sugar. I forget exactly. Do you remember the title of that sugar video? It has like, I think over like 10 million YouTube views. It's like not the case against sugar. I think that's Gary Tyler's book.
You said. Well, let's see. He has What is Metabolic Syndrome Anyway? That's his most popular one.
Not coming up?
No.
Whatever. Just Google the guy. Fat Chance. He has a book and he goes into that a lot. So he kind of goes into obesity being, or at least one of the symptoms of it being leptin resistance. So diabetes and just kind of high blood sugar is a case of insulin resistance. So again, it's just your hormones being out of whack. So if that interests you, you can check out that book. I personally didn't even like that book, to be honest, but that's just me. And we've said it a million times, like when people have their specialties, like his specialty is sugar, he blames everything under the sun against sugar. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just, if that's your specialty, everything gets blamed on that specialty, you know?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of bad guys out there. Sugar is definitely one of them. Sugar is definitely the worst. So, I mean, yeah. Like, he's not wrong by blaming a lot on sugar, but yeah. there's other factors going on, too.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. So, yeah, I remember reading that book and being like, yeah, I get sugar's bad, bro, but man, slow your roll. Like, you know, take it down from a 12 to a 10 at least, you mm-hmm. know? But yeah. But, no, as far as me this week, just kind of chilling, just doing notes for this. Like you said, I've wanted to talk about water for a long time. I got this book in the mail. It's going to be my new book. You know about this?
Oh, Sean Baker's book.
Yep, Sean Baker's book. I picked up The Carnivore Diet. And actually, I bought it months ago. I pre-ordered the book. And the first time I ever pre-ordered a book before. I think that's the most nerdy thing you can do. But he's... if you don't know who Sean Baker is, he's real big in the carnivore community. He's... I think he's like at Sean Baker on Instagram if you want to follow him. And big old dude. And I guess he didn't get me started with the carnivore diet, but he kind of reassured that I was on the right track. So when I officially when I really started this whole health thing, I kind of went paleo, kind of whole foods to low carb keto and then to carnivore. And then I was like, man, am I the only guy on earth only eating meat? Because I'm not, like, I never been on social media. I kind of stick to myself. So I kind of did all this stuff in a vacuum. And then I kind of, like, peeked my head out. And Sean Baker was one of the first guys I ran into. And he's a beast physically, you know, and that's obviously something that sticks out to me. You know, that's something I know how hard it is to be, like, kind of physically imposing, you know. And he sets world records in, like, a bunch of different athletic events. And I was like, oh, this guy knows what he's talking about. So when he came out with this book, it's called The Carnivore Diet, I instantly pre-ordered it. And I haven't started it yet. And I don't know when I have time to read shit anymore. You know what I mean? Like, honestly, all the stuff I read is about topics we're going to do. Like, we're not going to do a topic on the carnivore diet. We already did, you know?
Well, it's good that you support him because you did get a lot of information from him. I've gotten a lot of information from him. He was one of the early adopters of the carnivore diet, or yeah. At least one of the more mainstream people.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, there's definitely people before him, but they didn't get nearly as much traction as he did. I think because he's a doctor and because I think he got his license taken away because of all this. And he recently got reinstated. Everything's back to normal now. But
yeah, I think he was is he a surgeon?
Surgeon, yeah.
And he got tired of doing operations. He's like, hey, I can help more people. Like pre-surgery, just by changing up their diet. He wasn't even preaching carnivore. He was preaching just like a low-carb, ketogenic-style diet and lost it because of that.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just kind of crazy. Super crazy. At least he didn't get dragged through the mud like Noakes or
Gary Fetke.
Not
bad as that, yeah. Like he was sick of cutting off like diabetic feet. You know what I mean? He was just like, you know. And we all see that, man. It's not hard, man. Just look around. You can see the narrative that we're currently under is not working.
Oh, no, not at all.
You know what I mean? Everyone's sick. Everyone's fat. Like, you know, it is what it is. But, yeah, so I'm going to read that book at some point. I don't know when, to be honest. All my time's been taken up reading about water. I don't know who the shit is reading about water nowadays. You know what I mean? But I feel like I'm the only guy. But, yeah, I guess just to go into why, like, I really wanted to, I guess, make this episode, you know? It's because we all see people out there who... Like, how common is it to see someone carrying around, like, a Hydro Flask? You know what a Hydro Flask is, right?
Yeah, like those metal canteen water things.
Yeah, you know how much they cost?
I don't know. I buy, like, the knockoff versions. They're, like, $10.
Yeah, the official name brand ones, we're talking, like, $50 for a water bottle. And if you want, like, the big ones, like, maybe an exclusive color, we're talking, like, $60-$70 for a water bottle. And I don't care what they say. It keeps it cold for 10 months. I don't give a shit. That's too much for something that carries water, you know? But there's just this idea... That if you drink enough water, if you stay hydrated all the time, that's like the one thing you have to do to maintain your health. And I see it all the time. I know a guy personally who honestly doesn't give a shit about his health. He's heavy set, has every sign of metabolic syndrome out there, you know? And if you know what that is, just Google it. But if he gets his water in every day, his like whatever, 20 cups of water, he's like, okay, cool. Another good day in the books. And I'm like, bro, like, that's not going to save you.
So out of, like, the checklist of, like, hey, here's, like, 20 healthy habits, like, that drinking enough water per day probably would be, like, number 20.
Yes.
It's, like, a down at the bottom of the list. So he checks that one, doesn't even bother about the top 19.
No. And he's like, all right, good day. And I'm like, man, I see it everywhere. I see all these people who are just, not to be, like, rude, they're not healthy.
Yeah.
Right? And they're carrying these water bottles, and they're like, okay, I'm doing good. And I just want to, that was the motivation for me to be like, all right, where did this recommendation come from that we need to drink 1,000 liters of water a day, and why do people think it makes them healthier? So, honestly, it's crazy. Because there's no, everywhere we look, or at least I notice this myself, I think you do as well, when you kind of pick up the stone and look underneath it, as far as shit, like the dogma, like, there's no evidence backing this shit up.
No. And usually it has something to do with some sort of corporation making a bunch of money. This is where I don't get with water, is who's making money off of water?
Yeah, seriously. I know, it's crazy, right? But, yeah, so it's just, like, on the top level, it kind of makes sense, you know? Because obviously everyone knows you need water to survive. Like, I'm not arguing, like, my whole argument here is not against water. That's not what I'm arguing against, right? That would be dumb and that would be foolish. That'd be wrong. But I'm arguing that we don't need to drink past thirst to be healthy. So, and honestly, the vast majority of people already consume enough water. And I say consume specifically because we get our water more places than just drinking it. So, like, you drink coffee in the morning, a lot of people do, you're drinking water as well. You ever drink tea, soda, or juice, you're drinking water as well. And something people don't consider is that there's water in the food we eat. There's actually a ton of water in the food we eat. So, that contributes greatly to our total daily water intake. So, a few numbers for you, which I think people don't really recognize. 70% of steak is water. And that's because you find water in every muscle cell. And steak is predominantly muscle, right? And so therefore, with that logic, leaner cuts of meat will have more water in them. So there's no water in the fat portion of, like, meat cuts. That's crazy. Like, people don't think of that. You eat, like, by weight, 70% of what you're buying at the store, you're just buying water.
Yeah, that's a lot more than I thought. I mean, everybody should know that there's water in it. Like, once you cook a steak or, like, any sort of meat, you see the water coming out of it. You see the liquid coming out of it.
Yeah.
But it's not something I really think about. It's like, man, I'm so thirsty, I'm about to eat me a hamburger. Like, you know, I don't think I've ever said that sentence. But, yeah, it makes total sense.
Yeah. So there's going to be, like, more water in a chicken breast. There's going to be less water in a ribeye. It's just, you know, it's just how it works. And
the one thing I would say that's kind of counter to that is real food has water in it. But, like, there's so many processed foods. Like, how much water is in some cereal?
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, not a lot.
Yeah, because there's a lot of processed crap out there that's not going to have water. So, like, yeah, if you're eating a highly processed diet, like the individual you talked about earlier,
yes,
he probably needs to be drinking all that water because he's probably not getting any from his food or anything else.
Yeah, that's a good point. So the act of processing actually kind of breaks down cellular walls and kind of it'll make the sugar more bioavailable, so it'll hit your bloodstream even faster. But like I just said earlier, you find the water in the muscle cells. These are the intact muscle cells. But when you process shit, you break down those walls, you're going to release that water as well. And another thing, how long does processed food stay good on the shelves?
Really long time. They probably don't like water. I'm sure that moisture will make that shit mold up real quick.
1,000%. Yeah. Exactly, right? So one of the acts of processing is drying out water so that they can extend the life storage or self storage of the food.
Yeah, isn't that why, like, salt and sugar are added to almost everything?
Exactly.
To dehydrate it more.
Yep, and make it so they can make a box in, like, 2000 and it'll still be good in 2022. Yeah. You know, it's just how it is. So yeah, so you always hear people say, like, oh, I didn't drink any water today, but did you eat breakfast? Did you have coffee? It's like, yes, you did drink water. And all that water does count. You know, that it does go, your body treats it just like water. There's no difference at all. The big question I really wanted to answer with this podcast was, do average healthy individuals need to drink extra fluid when they're not thirsty to maintain health? Because that's kind of the narrative that's out there, and that's why people will drink. Even though they're not thirsty, they're drinking this shit, thinking they need to drink that much to maintain health. And I'm like, that's just, I knew that wasn't true. Just from my, like, sniff test. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, our body's smarter than that.
Well, and if you just think about it, like, okay, yeah, we have access to a shit ton of water and clean water in today's world.
Yes.
At least where we live, we're lucky enough to have that. But our ancestors, I mean, even go back 100 years, a couple hundred years ago, they wouldn't have had access to this much clean water.
They don't have faucets 24/7. So, like, how,
there's no way they would be able to drink this much water, and if they did, they would get so many different diseases.
Yep.
Like, yeah, it's just not even practical from a... You don't even need to say, like, an ancestral standpoint. No. Like, just like our grandparents' standpoint.
It is, yeah, exactly. No, that's a good point, yeah. So there's this narrative out there. It's called 8x8, and that is 8 glasses of 8 ounces of water every day. And that's 64 ounces total water every day. And that's kind of the, if you talk to a dietitian, if you Google like water benefits, that's going to be the general recommendation out there is 8x8. And
that's minimum, not maximum.
Yeah, that's a minimum for like a sedentary person to maintain health, according to these people, you know?
That's a lot. Like, I'm just kind of going through the math. Like, I probably do consume that on like my hardest training days. But I think that's it. I think the other 6 days out of the week, like, I'm not even close to that.
Yeah, I don't know, to be honest. I don't track my water.
And I'm not a sedentary person at all.
Like, no, like, the exact opposite. Yeah. Like, the shit you do, the ultra runs, that literally you are moving your body for dumb hours every day.
Yeah, and that's the only time I know I'm exceeding that, but, like, that's the only time.
That's the only time, yeah. And that would be appropriate.
Yeah, if I'm going on, like, a 5-mile run today, I'm probably not even going to come close to that.
Exactly, yeah. And so proponents of that 8x8 narrative, actually, they say it excludes coffee, they say it excludes beer, it excludes everything except for water, and the big thing, it also excludes water in food, which makes no sense. That's stupid, you know?
So I kind of understand, or we're actually going to talk about that later. The diuretic effect of beer, the alcohol and coffee. Okay.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. So I wanted to look into where did this 8x8 recommendation come from and have people been listening to it? So the big question is, are we drinking more water today than we were previously? And the answer is yes, 100%. So in 1977, the average total fluid intake was around 1,600 milliliters per American. And these are obviously American data. In 1996, that number was close to 2,200. So that's a pretty big jump.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, just 30%, 40% increase.
That's a lot. You know, that's a big increase. People heard the narrative that we need to drink more water, and they're listening as much as they, you know, think they aren't. They 100% are. No one knows for sure, like, where this 8x8 narrative came from, but it definitely didn't come from any, like, scientific study showing it has some, like, magical benefit. Like, there, you can't Google from, like, 1940, they did a study saying, oh, this dude drank hella water, and now he's hella healthy. That never happened. So where did it come from? So there's a few theories out there where this whole kind of drink hella water, be healthy comes from. The first one is from an outdated recommendation from 1945 when the Food and Nutrition Board, which is now a part of the NAM, the National Academic of Medicine, or excuse me, National Academy, holy fuck, I can't, what is, say that word.
Academy?
Academy.
I don't know, I like the academy.
What did I say? What was that word, a surfactant? Remember the lung surfactant? What did I call it?
Surfactant.
Surfactant. I think no one ever called me on it either. People I talk about this
When you read this stuff, I mean, it's kind of hard to know how it's pronounced. Like, you need to
Not academy, but yeah. So the National Academy of Medicine. So this is from 1945. It says claiming 1 mil of water per calorie. So 1,900 calories is approximately 1,900 milliliters of water. So that's 64 ounces. But people misinterpreted this as a recommendation to drink 1,900 milliliters of water, forgetting the fact that water is found in the other fluids we drink and the food we eat. So this is an actual quote from 1945. It says, a suitable allowance of water for adults is 2.5 liters daily in most instances. An ordinary standard for diverse persons is 1 milliliter for each calorie of food. Most of this quantity is contained in prepared foods. So it's like everyone just forgot that last sentence.
Yeah. And honestly, back in 1945, we weren't having as much processed food as we do now. So they were getting a lot more water from their food. Yeah. They would be eating real food.
Everyone in 1945 was eating real food.
Yeah, they'd be eating a steak.
Yeah, like, exactly.
They would get a lot of water from that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so... But for whatever reason, people just completely left out that last sentence, but so be it. There's also another theory that it might have came from a dude named Frederick Stare. So he was big on drinking a lot of water, and so he could have honestly just been regurgitating that 1945 data, we're not sure, but he was the head of nutrition at the head of the nutrition department at Harvard, and this was the, we've talked about a million times about Ansel Keys, and I guess I should, sometimes I forget, like, not everyone listens to these podcasts, so we probably should
Ansel Keys made everybody fear fat for absolutely no reason, and he's the reason that, like, heart disease is the number one killer of everybody in America.
Exactly. Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah, exactly. Like, you fear cholesterol.
One sentence summary.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, he's wrong, and he's the reason everyone fears cholesterol and they shouldn't.
He even admitted that he was partially wrong, but nobody ever cared.
Yeah, by that point, this was later on in his life, by that point, the industry had just kind of moved past him. You know, big money was being made by statins, and big money was being made by selling low-fat, highly processed foods, that they were like, all right, old man, shut up.
Yeah.
You know, pretty much, that's exactly what happened. But
and also, like, the government's been telling everybody to eat a certain way, according to you.
For 40 years.
Yeah, like, we can't just do a 180.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Kind of dug in a little too deep now.
Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, so this guy, Frederick Stare, he was kind of Ansel Keys' right-hand man. And he was there at Harvard promoting this low-fat narrative for a very long time. And honestly, you should look into Frederick Stare if you're interested to learn about the power of money, honestly, and corruption. So Frederick Stare was the guy in, like, the 60s, well, 50s, 60s, and 70s, blaming everything on fat and saying sugar was completely fine. And then it came out later in his life, that he was actually paid off by the sugar industry to say sugar was completely fine and that fat was bad. So this dude was corrupt to the core, and he's just as much to be blamed as Ansel Keys for a lot of people's deaths. Something I say a lot, and think you've repeated, is that Ansel Keys is responsible for just as many deaths as Hitler. And that sounds kind of inflammatory, and it should be. Like, it should kind of invoke an emotional response, because that should make you mad.
Yeah.
That this whole narrative has been promoted by these people who honestly had agendas and were getting paid left and right. There's actually a quote I pulled from the book Calories In, Calories Out by Gary Taubes. This is from Frederick Stare.
You mean, is that good calories, bad calories?
That's exactly what that is. Good calories, bad calories, okay. By Gary Taubes. So this is a quote from him. He says, "Calories are all alike," said Harvard nutritionist Fred Stare. "Whether they come from beef or bourbon, from sugar or starch, or from cheese and crackers, too many calories are too many calories." If someone told you that, you'd be like, bro, you're an idiot.
I mean, we've covered that in a few different, like, conversations and podcasts.
This is what he was preaching. This was in the 70s and he was doing his thing. So this is actually from a book he co-authored in 1974. And this was really his only reference to water, even though, like, kind of in speeches he did and people who knew him say he was a big proponent of drinking water. This was the only thing he kind of had on paper. So this is a quote. It says, "How much water each day? This is usually well regulated by various physiological mechanisms, but for the average adult, somewhere around 6 to 8 glasses per 24 hours, and this can be from coffee, tea, milk, soft drinks, beer, etc. Fruits and vegetables are also a good source of water." So that's from Frederick Stare. That's really the only hard recommendation he ever put on paper. And again, this wasn't based on any study. This wasn't based on any facts. This was simply a statement made by a corrupt nutritionist. And that's, like, the basis that people don't realize. That's the foundation in which this whole narrative is built upon. Like, the foundation is weak. That shit is built on sand, you know?
Yeah, and yeah, you hear that all the time. You hear it on the news, repeated all the time.
Like, it's fact.
Yeah.
Like, it's the gospel, you know?
And one thing I always think is funny is when we make these recommendations, like, people try to follow them as best they can. But just, like, all right, common sense. Do you need as much water July 1st as you do December 1st?
No.
You need probably a lot more July 1st.
Hot as shit.
Yeah, than you would December 1st. Like, you're not going to need the same amount of water. So, like, just saying, like, this is a daily requirement without giving it a little bit of nuance.
Or context, anyway.
Yeah. Like, oh, hey, you know, maybe you should probably be within this range. Maybe instead of 64 ounces a day, maybe you should be between that 40 to 80. Or give some guidelines about body weight. That's the one thing that kills me all the time.
I know.
A grown man needs 2,500 calories a day. Well, it depends on the grown man. I'm pretty sure Shaquille yeah. O'Neal needs a little bit more than 2,500 calories a day.
Yeah, especially compared to me or you.
Yeah. Like, I don't think Kevin Hart and Shaq are on the same diet.
No, definitely not. Definitely not in calorie-wise, yeah.
But, just complete side note. Kobe Bryant and his daughter were at the Lakers game, like, a week ago.
Saw it.
And Kevin Hart was there and took a picture with Kobe Bryant's daughter.
Mm.
I think she's taller than him.
Oh, for sure she is.
And she's in middle school right now.
Yeah, though she has God DNA.
I was laughing so hard when I saw that.
She's going to be, I think she's going to the WNBA. They say she's pretty good.
I've seen a couple of videos of her. She has probably the best, like, middle school basketball coach in the world.
Oh, for sure.
Probably world history.
Yeah, with Kobe Bryant. Her dad. Mm-hmm.
And if she can be coached by him and she still wants to play, oh, she's got the heart of a champion.
Yeah, she has a mindset for it. Because, yeah, you know, he doesn't take anything less than greatness. 100% effort all the time.
If you haven't looked up, like, any of the stories with him and his coaching, there's some, like, crazy, like, stories out there.
Yeah.
One team beat him, like, 1 year, and then, like, 2 years later, he replayed him. And the team beat him by, like, I think it was, like, 90 points. It was some absurd number. It was, like, 94 to, like, 8. Uh-huh. Or something ridiculous like that. And it was a full court press the entire game.
You mean he beat that team?
Like, his middle school girl team,
yes,
beat that other middle school girl
crushed team. Him.
For beating them 2 years ago.
Yep.
And just, like, no mercy. We're going balls to the wall the entire time. Just, it's like, man.
I love that, though.
I think it's funny.
Yeah.
But I would not love it if my daughter was on the other team.
The opposing team. Yeah, no, that'll demoralize a girl real quick, yeah, or anybody, honestly. Yeah. But, yeah, no, to go back to that quote. So even this guy, Frederick Stare, he says in that quote, usually well-regulated by various physiological mechanisms. Like, so even he, like, put that in there. Like, your body knows how much water to drink. But, like, proponents of the 8x8 claim that if we wait for these mechanisms, like thirst, if we wait for thirst to determine our water intake, then we're already dehydrated. You heard that, right?
I've heard that, but, like, honestly, like, does that mean, okay, 1% dehydrated, is that negative? Is that really going to have that big of a, like, a change? Am I going to notice that I'm 1% dehydrated? I get it. If I'm, like, 100% dehydrated, like, I haven't had fluid in, like, 3 days.
Yeah, if your lips are all cracked, you're, you know,
can't think straight. Yeah, I get that, but just being, oh, hey, you're slightly dehydrated and saying that's something really negative, I don't think so.
Yeah. So I looked into, like, so is that true? So are we dehydrated by the time we feel thirsty? And the answer is no. Black and white, hard facts, no. And here's some quotes. And again, I link all these studies. I'm going to pull some quotes from studies now. They're all on the website, so if you can read them yourselves, you can check it out. So this is a quote. It says, on the contrary, plasma sodium concentration remains relatively constant with only small fluctuations that are much less than the 4.2 rise necessary to stimulate osmotic thirst in man. Osmotic thirst in man. Some of these words, man, I can't talk for shit today. But again, this quote continues. Thus, under the relatively natural conditions of this experiment, humans became thirsty and drank in the absence of significant body fluid changes. And that is the marker for dehydration, is total body water loss. That's the marker for it. So, and that's the only marker for it. So this is saying that we become thirsty before any big changes happen.
Which makes sense. Like, our thirst is like an alarm going off. Like, oh, hey, you're running low on water. You should drink it.
No shit.
So, exactly. Like, would it make sense for that alarm to go off?
Hella late.
When it's too late. Oh, hey, by the way, like, you're thirsty. You need to drink water. But you're not going to be able to do anything about it.
Yes.
You're too far gone.
See, you're not making a big, like, giant leap mentally. You're just kind of connecting some simple dots. Well, how come people can't do that?
Our thirst mechanism isn't like a hindsight thing.
Yeah, it's not broken. You know,
it's like, oh, hey, by the way, you should drink water 5 hours ago. Yeah, like, that's not what our thirst mechanism
is. Yeah, it's not like judging us for not being psychic.
It's like, oh, hey, you're thirsty. You should probably drink something soon.
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, hey, you should have done it 2 hours ago.
Yes. Yeah. But people really think that, you know? So, and here's another quote. So the results indicate that during free access to water, humans become thirsty and drink before body fluid deficits develop, and so provide evidence for anticipatory thirst and drinking in man. And it actually says that specifically in man, because this study compared different species. So I guess in dogs, it's not anticipatory. When they drink water, they're like dehydrated as shit. And I was like, okay, so that's what happened. And there's some other species in there. You can read the whole paper if you want. No one will, to be honest, but whatever. I read it. But
so when they're dehydrated, are they, like, doing any other sort of testing to confirm that, like, they're dehydrated?
They measure the total body water loss.
But do they, like, do, like, a running test or something to see, like, how that dehydration actually, like, affects anything?
No.
Okay. Mm-mm.
No, I'm not saying, and they're not saying this either, that dehydration negatively impacts anything.
Okay.
Yeah, and Noakes would say that dehydration, in a state of being dehydrated, can be beneficial in athletic performance. especially if you're running.
Yeah, we'll be talking about that in another podcast.
Yeah. Actually, I guess I'll talk about it now. I was going to do this on just hydration in general, which this podcast is going to be on, but I was going to incorporate like athletic events, like how much water, how much fluid you should intake when exercising or when doing crazy shit like working out or running 100 miles. But the kind of the general recommendation and the recommendations for training are different. And so it would have been a complicated podcast.
And we probably have already talked about 2 hours on that topic alone, mm-hmm. just like off the podcast. Like that's its own
separate its own thing. Yeah.
Yeah. That's probably going to be a longer podcast.
And it's going to be a little more complicated for sure. And
there's a ton of nuance to that.
Yeah.
There's like so many, it depends.
It depends.
Yeah.
Yeah. This shit doesn't depend what I'm talking about now. But the stuff when you're training and the stuff when you're kind of doing, you're putting your body to extremes, salt and electrolytes and water, the needs are different. So that's why I didn't talk about it here. But yeah, so pretty much just to put a bow on that, by the time we're thirsty, we're not dehydrated. Like our body is smart. It'll see a trend and it'll say, hey, drink some water. That's all you need to do. If you listen to that first, you'll be honestly 100% fine. Another big myth out there that proponents of the 8x8 say is that if your urine is slightly dark, then you are already dehydrated and you need to drink more. And honestly, this isn't clear. I mean, this isn't right either. So pee isn't supposed to be 100% clear all the time. The information you can obtain from the color of your urine is greatly exaggerated. So it's not as simple as light urine, you're hydrated, and dark urine, you're dehydrated. There's more, again, nuance to it.
Well, because we're peeing out a lot more than just water. There's a lot of other things that go along with it.
Yeah, 100%.
So it's really, you can't, there's some things you can kind of tell, but yeah, there is a lot of nuance to it.
And they don't want you to know that. And again, it's kind of like, I've said it a million times in the podcast, it's like half-truths.
Yeah.
Like people present half-truths like it's the whole story. And I hate that shit, you know? Because especially if you're not inclined to know these things, which most people aren't, or you don't have an interest in it like I do, half-truths sound like full truths.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, I don't know, it's really misleading, and I hate that it's out there, but it's just the way it is. But I'm going to pull some quotes now. And these studies were complicated. These quotes are a little complicated, so sorry in advance. But
this is all from Noakes, right?
One's from Noakes and one's from another study.
Okay.
So, and they're both of these are actually on the website, so you can pull them up. But so this is the first quote. So at a urine osmolarity of 600, the concentration of solutes in the urine is such that the urine has a moderately yellow color, which might be interpreted as dark, especially when contrasted against pale yellow or clear. Yet at the above-cited normal urinary volume and osmolarity, the plasma osmolarity will be well within the normal range and nowhere near the values of 300 and higher, which are seen in meaningful dehydration. Therefore, the warning that dark urine reflects dehydration is alarmist and false in most instances. I really like it. This dude didn't pull any punches.
Yeah.
He's like, that's really black and white. Like, the people saying that the color of urine is a marker for hydration, he's like, it's just wrong. And I'm not sure. I guess the color of urine, I don't know who started that. You can get so much information from that. I don't know if it was these guys, like the water guys, but I don't know. People have a weird thing with urine. it's what it is, man. Like, you can't get that much information from it. But
well, I know that was how you used to be able to tell if somebody had diabetes or not. Was their urine
sweet?
It would smell sweet, and then I think they tasted
it. I'm pretty sure they tasted it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. There's a lot of weird people out there.
So I mean, like, yeah. I mean, this is like medieval times.
Type of stuff.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. They might have been doing that in the 1800s too. I don't know.
I don't know either. Yeah, but that definitely was a marker for it too. Yeah. But this is a quote from Waterlogged. So this is Tim Noakes' book. So he says, the use of urine color, much promoted by some scientists, is of no value because it is a measure of the brain and kidney's response to changes in blood osmolarity. It does not tell us exactly what the blood osmolarity is, which is the true measure of the body's fluid status, and whether it is raised, lowered, or normal. As we will show, athletes with EAH, which is exercise-associated hyponatremia, which is low blood sodium, typically excrete dark urine even though they are severely overhydrated with blood osmolarities that are greatly reduced. So these are saying this is just one case where these people are going to pee out very dark urine, but they are honestly extremely overhydrated. So you can't get that much information from the color of your urine. I want to put that sentence or that like myth to bed. Like, everyone believes that shit. Your mom believes that shit. Your grandma believes that shit. Everyone does, you know?
Well, yeah, that was, we talked about that. I mean, that's something I believe that there is, like, nuance to it. I would think on a day-to-day basis, if, like, your pee is dark one day, and then it's light the other day, and there's, you know, the 2 days were pretty similar, you're not doing any sort of crazy, like, athletic endeavor, you there's probably a hydration issue with that.
Maybe.
Possibly. For sure. I mean, there's a lot more going on.
Yeah. But it's not black and white.
Yeah, definitely. It's not, oh, clear signs.
Yes.
There's other things going on.
That's what I wanted to get across for sure.
And, yeah, this is the first time we talked about overhydration. But, yeah, that's a thing. That basically means, like, there's not enough... when we talk about osmolarity, that just means, like, particles in your blood or in your plasma, wherever it is. So that would be salt, other sodium, all the other minerals... The glucose that's in your blood, pretty much everything that makes up your blood that's not water, that's where all the osmolarity comes from.
Yeah.
And if you have too much water, that means you basically don't have enough sodium, potassium, all those other things.
Yeah. That's why that number, as you get overhydrated, the salt number goes down, you know? So, yeah. So this, and actually overhydration is going to be a topic for the water and exercise podcast. That's actually going to come up a lot.
Yeah.
And that shit gets complicated, and I barely have my head wrapped around it. So I'm still trying to figure all that shit out. But so this is a quote, actually, from just to get to the current recommendations for today. Like, this is the NAM, so the National Academy of Medicine. Let me say that word right. This is what they recommend today for just the average people. So they say the vast majority of healthy people adequately meet their daily hydration needs by letting thirst be their guide. So they have no hard number to hit every day. They don't recommend the 8x8 narrative. They just have a current, like, general recommendation of about 3.7 liters for men and 2.7 liters for women. And that's from all sources. It's not just drinking water alone. That counts coffee. That counts food, of course. And I did want to look into some scenarios where increased water beyond thirst seems to be of benefit. And the one thing that came up a lot was kidney stones.
This makes sense. This makes a lot of sense.
Makes sense, right? Yeah. And it's actually, you know what? There's a guy, Reggie. I don't think Reggie listens to this, but if he does, Reggie's my man. He's my wife's, I guess I'll just call him her uncle, I guess. And he's like the kidney stone guy. Every time I talk to him, he has another kidney stone. Swear to God, he's had like 15 kidney stones. And he says...
High oxalate diet?
Oh, 1,000%, right? Okay. Does he listen to me? Sure, shit doesn't. Reggie should listen to me, but it's cool, bro. But he says his doctor, you know, you can't recommend a low oxalate diet because you know what a low oxalate diet is?
Carnivore?
Well, yeah, 100%. But if someone doesn't want to go that extreme, a low oxalate diet is low in vegetables.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So you simply can't recommend
it. Well, especially the ones that are, like, promoted as the healthiest.
Yeah, kale, spinach.
Kale, spinach. I mean, other ones that are also, like, health foods would be sweet potatoes are pretty high in oxalates.
Yeah. Almonds.
Real chocolate, like, is really high in oxalates. Uh-huh. It's, like, a lot of those, like... superfoods, yeah, are really high in oxalates.
Exactly. So a doctor nowadays simply can't recommend it, or they're just not educated enough to know.
Well, if you remove all those things, like, what do you recommend?
Yeah, what we recommend.
Like, oh, you can't eat lettuce or any other sort of green leafy thing. Mm-hmm. You can't eat other vegetables.
Can't eat nuts.
Can't eat nuts. Can't eat dark chocolate. No. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, sorry, but eat a steak. But they can't recommend that because there's so much fat in it, right?
Yeah.
So I know it's sad. So I told him that, but he did tell me his doctor said to drink hella water, right? And for me, I was like, whatever a doctor says, I'm like instantly skeptical. You know what I mean?
Well, especially when it comes to nutrition, because maybe they took some training on their own in nutrition, but most likely it's just them repeating the same crap that everybody else knows that they get from the news or wherever else.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And they get like 1 week of nutrition in med school, like 1 week, and you're supposed to know everything.
Yeah.
Come on, man. This is crazy. So, but I did, I was like, let me see if there's really any truth to this whole drink a hell of water if you're prone to kidney stones. What you should do is go on a low oxalate diet, but hey, if you don't want to do that, here's something you can do. So this is a study called the Urinary Volume, Water, and Recurrences. This is people with kidney stones. And so more water seems to be better for them. This is a quote. So in this study, we have shown that patients with kidney stones have a urine volume at the first episode that is lower than the volume of healthy control subjects, and that a simple but adequate increase in water intake without any changes in diet can prevent reoccurrences in a large number of subjects. So here's some numbers. So in group one, treated with a high intake of water without any diet changes, the percentage of subjects with recurrences was 12.1% in 5 years, while in group two, which was untreated, it had a greater chance of recurrence at 27%. So that's over double. So that's a pretty big, you know, pretty big jump. And there was, it was pretty like simple study. They just told them to drink more water, you know? So that's pretty cool, you know?
I mean, it makes sense. Like if you're constantly like emptying your bladder, I would assume like it's harder for those
to build up.
Yeah. For the kidney stones to build up.
Yeah. Cause kidney stones are really just a buildup of oxalate, like calcium oxalates. And, we talked about oxalates in the, I don't know if it was a soy, I think it might've been the soy podcast.
Yeah, I know we talked about it. It seemed like everything on that soy podcast. Yeah. Everything that was wrong is in soy.
Yeah, everything wrong that it, yeah, exactly. Anything that's bad is in soy. That's why I hate soy so much. But, so there's a whole other claim that talks about, oh, and I hate this shit. People are like, oh, I drink all this water to cleanse myself. I need to cleanse my blood. And these are people with no scientific background. These are people that know nothing about how the body works, know nothing about diet or health, but they know that drinking water cleans their blood. I'm like, how do you know this shit? You don't know nothing. You know what I mean? Like, it bugs me. But I looked into that as well. And it seems like the answer for that is a little bit, it's yes, no, and maybe, kind of depending on what we're talking about. So the kidney has multiple ways to clear our blood, or to clean our blood. So it has glomerular filtration, tubular secretion, and various degradative metabolic pathways. And so if excess water would lead to more toxins leaving the body, it would work through one of these mechanisms. So for GFR, which is just glomerular filtration, excess water has been shown to reduce it. And that's not a good thing. That would cause more of a buildup. So here's a quote. So this quote said, increased water intake actually decreased GFR. It might therefore seem that any toxin removed purely by GFR is clearly less efficiently in the setting of increased water intake. So that's the complete opposite. So increased water, less GFR, not a good thing.
So that means we're not peeing it out, right?
Yeah, it means we're retaining it more. It's staying in our blood. So
we're not peeing out these toxins if we drink more water?
Exactly. If it is metabolized or filtered via GFR, right? Okay. So there's a lot of if, ands, or buts with this type of argument. So here's another quote. So it says, the total clearance of osmoles increased. And you can think osmoles as just another word for like things in our blood, right? Salt, sugar, whatever. So the total clearance of osmoles increased as water intake increased, probably as a result of reduced reabsorption. If there are any dangerous substances among these osmoles, then increased water intake might indeed help in the clearance. So again, that's just another mechanism. We did pee out more osmoles, which are just things in our blood, but we don't know what these osmoles are. And this paper, and I said last week, the appeal to authority fallacy, where if you don't know, you kind of just go to what the expert says. And I'm saying,
you know, what experts, the majority agree upon.
I'm saying that in air quotes. So it said one of these osmoles that was excreted the most, guess what that was? It was salt, right? And it said, made the kind of argument that this might be good for someone with hypertension, since excess salt leads to hypertension. See what I'm saying? That was their argument there. And I was like, that's not true. I would argue peeing out too much salt is definitely not a good thing. So, but they don't know that. You know, they don't know shit about salt. They just know a little bit about how kidneys filter things. But this is a kind of the quote from this one. It's kind of a concluding thing. So it says, in short, increased water intake does have some impact on renal clearance of various substances, but current data are insufficient to assess the clinical significance of these observations. In fact, given how little is known about the identity of toxic substances cleared by the kidney, it is unlikely this type of data can conclusively demonstrate a benefit from excess water drinking. In conclusion, there is no clear evidence of benefit from drinking increased amounts of water. I mean, that's black and white.
I mean, so what it sounds like what's going on there is that you have so much water that it's hard, like all the toxins that are in it are being diluted, so they're being harder to detect. Is what it sounds like to me, is what's going on there.
And we simply don't have good ways to detect all the shit in our kidneys anyways. Yeah. You know what I mean? We don't really know. We don't know the whole picture. So do more things get released through your kidneys? Sure. And they're saying toxic substances in quotes. I mean, you can't see that when I'm like saying it out loud. They don't even know if they're quote unquote toxic. They're just things. You know what I'm saying? So simply put, does it clean our blood more? I'll say no. It kind of, we pee out some more things. Is it good? Is it bad? We don't know, you know?
I mean, it sounds like anybody's guess.
Yes.
You know, nobody really knows at all.
Exactly, yeah. So honestly, from everything I've looked into, what's my general recommendation for water intake? It would be to drink water with your meals and then let thirst be your guide the rest of the time. If you just live that way, you'll be perfectly fine. If you're going off throughout the day, you're doing your thing, you're working, you're just living your life, and you're not thirsty, don't be paranoid about it or worry like, oh, I'm not getting my water in. If your body needs water, it'll tell you. Our thirst signal is fucking primal. Like, if you get thirsty enough, you will not think about anything else. You won't think about your wife, you won't think about your kids, you'll just be like, yo, where's the water at? Okay? Like, you're gonna know if you're really thirsty, trust me. So let thirst be your guide. That's my general recommendation. And I know that's so... I mean, to me, that sounds so basic. It sounds so simple.
Yeah.
But people make this shit so complicated. You don't need a damn $100 Hydro Flask to be healthy. You're not LeBron James, chick. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Well, honestly, all this stuff has to be incredibly simple because, like, there's animals that have these same mechanisms going on that are dumb as hell. So they need to be able to figure this shit out.
Yeah.
Like, if we're too smart.
Yeah, we overthought this.
Yeah.
That's exactly what happened.
So I thought we were going to talk about the diuretic effect of certain beverages.
Oh, yeah. So I did forget to mention the stuff on caffeine. So proponents of the 8x8 will say caffeine or coffee specifically doesn't have any effect on, like, total body hydration because it has a diuretic effect. And if we, like, if today is the first day you ever drink coffee, which I don't know who the hell you are, you're weird, but caffeine will have a diuretic effect. Coffee will, right? You'll end up peeing out more water. But that effect is greatly exaggerated. And the more you drink coffee, the less that effect happens, to a point that it stops happening, period. And that has been studied, and I will link that on the website, of course, like everything else. Like, I back up everything I say. I'm not just making this shit up. This is a quote, and it says, advising people to disregard caffeinated beverages as part of a daily fluid intake is not substantiated by the results. It simply showed that your body gets so accustomed to that, that it's not something to take into effect. Like, you can take water, or you can account for water in your coffee as your total daily water intake. Yeah.
Yeah, and some other nuance to it, too, is it also depends on how hydrated you are when you have the coffee. So if you're really hydrated and you have a cup of coffee, yeah, you probably are going to urinate. But if you're, like, dehydrated, like, if you were trapped, like, you were camping, you have no clean water, but you have coffee, like, if that was your only source of liquid... like, that coffee would keep you alive. It would not kill you. It would not dehydrate you more than what you already are.
Yes.
You could say the same thing about, like, alcohol. Yes. Like, yes, beer will make you pee, but, like, if you are relying on that beer for that water content to keep you alive, it will not have a negative effect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's actually really... No one said it like that in their studies, but that's a very good point.
Yeah.
It depends on your hydration status as is, on top of the fact that if you drink coffee every day, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like, you can't just say it's a complete negative hydrator. It's like, no, there's some nuance to it.
But, again, I say it a million times, I feel like this is my new fucking slogan, but half-truths.
Yeah.
People will, there's studies out there, there's markers, like, hey, coffee has a diuretic effect, here's this. And it's like, yo, go show Joe Blow, who's never drank coffee in his life, this weird dude in, I don't know, fucking Idaho, right? And does coffee make him pee more? Sure. But for everybody else who drinks coffee every day, it doesn't.
Yeah, I have a cup of coffee every morning, and it doesn't make me pee.
Yeah,
exactly. I mean, like, if I have that cup of coffee and I have 3 glasses of water with it, then I might have to pee.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But so I don't think it's just the coffee.
Yeah. So, again, it's just half-truths and people presenting misinformation as the full story, and I hate that shit, so...
Well, honestly, like, the answer to every single question about, like, biology is it depends. Because there's so many other factors
that go variables. Into it. Yeah, for sure. So, I don't know. Yeah, I think we covered water okay.
I mean, no, but we're going to go more into depth later on. Yeah. I mean, just for healthy individuals, like, on a normal basis, drink when you're thirsty. If you're not thirsty, then you probably don't need to drink. I mean, it's really just that simple.
It is that simple. It really is. So did you have a tip of the week this week?
Yeah, so last week when we were talking about stress, I kind of went over a little bit of, like, breathing techniques, but I never actually went over, like, how to do them.
Okay.
So I just wanted to kind of just go over, like, briefly 3 different breathing techniques that I use on, like, a daily basis.
That would be good for me because I don't know one of these. I know that.
And you know what? Like, most Americans breathe wrong. It sounds really funny, but, like, yeah, most people are breathing wrong.
Hey, most people drink water wrong, too.
Yeah. 2 of the most basic things.
Yeah.
So, if you ever look at... I mean, I got dogs, so I'm looking at my dog sleeping all the time. I don't notice their rib cage going up and down when they're breathing. It's their stomach that goes up and down. If you have a small child, like a baby, their belly goes up and down, like when they're breathing. It's not their rib cage that's moving. But if you like tell somebody to take a deep breath, like what do?
Lungs, your ribs.
Shoulders went up.
Yep.
Your chest expanded. But like, where's your diaphragm?
Yeah, below your stomach.
Yeah. So yeah, like, why are you breathing for now up here? Uh-huh. It's because like our culture values like that V look. That big chest.
Fuck, I don't know. You're talking to me.
Big chest, tiny waist. That's true for both males and females. Yeah. So when we breathe, when we puff up our chest, that's what we're doing. We're doing that for the aesthetics.
Peacock.
Yeah, that's what we're doing. Exactly. We're peacocking out.
Yeah.
But really, you want to be breathing from your belly. That's where your diaphragm is. That's how you're going to get all that air in.
Mm.
So like a good way just to learn how to do that is you can put your hand like on your belly button or like right above your belly button in between your rib cage. When you take a nice deep breath in, your belly should be going out. You should be pushing your hand out. And when you exhale, you're contracting your stomach. Your stomach is going in.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what's going on. So when you breathe in, stomach pushes out. Exhale, stomach goes in.
Okay, I'm just doing it now.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's a great way to kind of like your diaphragm. It's like the only like muscle that we have control of, but we don't.
It's not 50-50, right?
It's really weird. We can control it, but 99% of the time, it's not under our control. And since we are able to control our breathing, we're able to mess with that sympathetic and parasympathetic states. We're able to play with that a little bit.
Okay.
So that's belly breathing. And that's just like the outline. Like anytime you're breathing and you're paying attention to your breathing, that's what you should be doing, is belly breathing. So the next one is box breathing. This is just like a little technique. Very simple. Anybody can do this. So it's a 4 second in, so inhale in, hold it for 4 seconds, exhale for four, hold for four, then inhale again.
Okay.
It's,
hold on, I want to say, I think I said the diaphragm was below your stomach.
Well, it's below, it's like at the bottom of your ribcage.
Yeah, that's what I meant. I'm sorry. I don't want to
know. No, yeah, it's not down in your
ribcage. I don't want any anatomy nerd out there to correct. I want to correct that first. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't pick that up.
Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah, it's underneath your lungs. Like, it's the bottom of your, like, ribcage, like, right through there. So, yeah, box breathing, 4 seconds in, hold for four, 4 seconds out, hold for four. That holding for four right after you exhale is really hard to do, especially in the beginning. But the more and more you practice with it, you can get better. And after you've been doing that for a while, you can go up to 8 seconds. I do somewhere between 4 second counts or 8 second counts. But it's a nice, real easy pattern. You can do that while you're driving. You can do that while you're doing the dishes, anything like that. That's a really easy technique, nice and relaxing. And then the other one is alternate nostril breathing. And this is a little weird. You might want to be doing this by yourself because you're going to look kind
of
funny.
Like, is this literally like left and right side of your nose?
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's really simple.
Okay.
So you do like a hang loose sign, like you have your pinky out and your thumb out.
Like chilling, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you close up one nostril, breathe in, change nostrils, block the other side, exhale out the other. So I breathe in through my right nostril, exhale through my left, and then I'm going to keep my hands there, inhale through my left, and then exhale out my right. And you just keep going back and forth.
Okay.
So you exhale from one side, then inhale from that same side, and then you switch sides. Seems simple enough?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Really basic techniques. Again, you want to be doing belly breathing when you're doing either that box breathing or that nostril breathing. But if you have like a heart rate monitor, that should drop you down at least like 5 beats if you do that for a good like 5 minutes.
The alternate nostril breathing one?
Alternate or box breathing.
Well, I wonder why. Do you know?
What I really think it is that you're just being mindful of it.
Being aware.
You're breathing. You're probably breathing a lot better than what you were when you weren't paying attention to it.
Okay.
You're slowing down. You're not doing anything else. So you don't have any other like outside stressors affecting your heart rate or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're just overall just increasing your oxygen.
Got it.
I mean, I don't really know. I don't know scientific
makes sense.
Studies about that, but that's just...
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I like that.
Yeah. So, that's it for the tip of the week. Just try out those breathing techniques. I mean, they're all really simple, but they're very, very effective.
Yeah, those are really cool because you can do those anywhere, anytime, for the most part.
Oh, I'm doing box breathing all the time. I'm stopped at a red light or just anytime I'm like just thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
I just do it all the time.
You know what I notice I do all the time? I even do it now. I kind of hunch my traps. And I don't know if it's a peacocking thing sometimes. Like, I'm trying to look bigger than what I am. Like, when I rest, like, my neck is way more tense than it should be. Like, okay. I have to remember to...
It's cool. Something primal like that, probably.
It is. You know, I don't know what it is. But
there's so much body language stuff that we don't pick up on, that we're not conscious of, that we're doing just for some animalistic reason.
Yeah, that lizard brain. Yeah, I know. But all right, yeah, that's another podcast in the books. Thank you for listening. Again, we'll cover the hydration for working out in another podcast. That'll be interesting as well. But yeah, you can find us at TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, so feel free to check us out anytime.
Yeah, please rate and subscribe to the podcast. You can find us everywhere. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and YouTube. Also, feel free to share with a friend. And you can also donate on our homepage. There's a bright yellow button on the bottom of our homepage. I hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.